And opinions expressed on this show are those of the host and guests, and not necessarily the views of staff and management of WNYG. Iron Sharpens Iron, brought to you in part by Buttafuoco and Associates.
Welcome to Iron Sharpens Iron, the only daily live broadcast in the New York metropolitan and greater Long Island areas, on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians have a platform to address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27:17 tells us, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Matthew Henry said that in this passage, we are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better. It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. And now, here's our host, Chris Arnzen.
Good afternoon, Long Island, New York, Connecticut, and those listening internationally over the internet. This is Chris Arnzen, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron. And we're going to be dealing with a subject that we've never focused on before on this broadcast. Freemasonry, a dangerous cult. And our author, our guest, I should say, to discuss this theme, is the author of the book of the same title, Freemasonry, a Dangerous Cult, scheduled to be published in 2008. John Otis, who is the pastor of the Westminster Presbyterian Church in Corpus Christi, Texas, spearheaded the Presbyterian Church in America investigation of this organization and was on the PCA General Assembly Study Committee from 1986 to 1987 that was appointed to determine whether the tenets of Freemasonry violated Holy Scripture. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question for Pastor John Otis regarding Freemasonry, our number is 631-321-WNYG, 631-321-WNYG. Why not have family, friends, and loved ones tune into the program, especially if they are members of the Masonic Lodge or curious about it, or perhaps they need to learn more about it because they have loved ones or family or friends who are involved in the organization. Call them up during the station break. Have them tune in to 1440 AM on the dial if they live on Long Island or the coast of Connecticut. But they can listen anywhere on the planet Earth, where the program is live streamed at www.wnygspiritofny.com. WNYGspiritofny.com, also now live streaming at sharpens.blogspot.com. That's sharpens.blogspot.com. We'll be right back after these messages with John Otis and Freemasonry, a Dangerous Cult.
Clients come to us and they're usually in a state of shock and confusion. They've just experienced the unthinkable. Their life is falling apart. They have no money. They have lost their means of getting money. Their health is gone.
When you've been injured, you deserve a champion because the other guys already have one.
The insurance companies wage a war of attrition, so if you cannot wait for your case to come to court and it takes a while, you end up settling for a meager amount because you can no longer endure the fight.
Look to the personal injury attorney with a heart for helping people.
We will look to get them living arrangements, hook them up with a pastor or a church, build a support system around them. We'll get them medical care. We provide a comprehensive situation where we meet the needs of the whole person, not just represent them in court.
When you've been injured, your champion is Dan Buttafuoco. There are no upfront fees. The only fee is after you win your case. For a free consultation, call the law offices of Dan Buttafuoco at 1-800-NOW-HURT. 1-800-NOW-HURT.
Derek Weinmayer knew the risks. Less than 1,200 people had ever conquered Mount Everest, and more than 175 had died trying. But still he climbed, not seeing the terrifying drops or the fear on other faces. And when he reached the summit, he didn't even see the view, because Eric Weinmayer is blind. He proved it doesn't take sight to reach the top. It takes vision. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
This is Chris Arnzen, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron. If you've just tuned us in, We are going to be discussing a topic that we have never addressed here on Iron Sharpens Iron before, Freemasonry, a Dangerous Cult. And to address this very important subject today is our guest, Pastor John Otis of the Westminster Presbyterian Church in Corpus Christi, Texas, who is the author of the book of the same name, Freemasonry, a Dangerous Cult, scheduled to be published in 2008. And it has been considered to be the most extensive study in print on Freemasonry. And as I mentioned earlier, Pastor Otis also spearheaded the Presbyterian Church in America investigation into this organization while he was a member of that Presbyterian body. And he was on the PCA General Assembly Study Committee from 1986 to 87 that was appointed to determine whether the tenets of Freemasonry Freemasonry violated Holy Scripture. And he is currently a member of the Reformed Presbyterian Church in the United States. But it's a great pleasure to have you back as a guest on the program, Pastor John Otis.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
And tell us something about why you originally spearheaded the Presbyterian Church of America investigation of the Freemasons.
This started way back in 1984 or 1985 when I was pastor of Coburn Presbyterian Church, PCA, in Coburn, Virginia. I was doing a study on cults, and as I was doing that, I remembered that when I was back in seminary, someone mentioned that Freemasonry was a cult, and I really didn't know anything about it. So I ordered a book called Should a Christian Be a Mason, which is still in print in a very good short synopsis of Freemasonry. As I read that book, I said, I cannot believe that there are a lot of Christians out there who think there's nothing wrong. So I did extensive research. I ordered original sources from Masonic bookhouses and the like. And then taught a class on that in my church. And then I went to my presbytery and told them we needed to overture the General Assembly to investigate this, which my presbytery, Westminster Presbytery, the PCA, did at that time. And then the General Assembly the following year approved a study committee to look into this. And I was put on that as one of four men to gather information. And then a year later, the General Assembly approved our report condemning Freemasonry as incompatible with Christian faith.
So, in other words, the Presbyterian Church in America basically allowed its members to be members of the Masonic Lodge even through the late 20th century?
Well, probably so, although I don't know of how many people in the Presbyterian Church would have been involved, but in certain denominations, not a Presbyterian, like, have had a lot of people members of the Lodge.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us something about this organization itself. What are the foundations, the historical foundations of Freemasonry?
Well, the Masonic Lodge, as we understand it today, was organized as a Grand Lodge in England in 1717. It originally began as operative Freemasons, meaning that these were individuals who were in the field of masonry, building, who gathered together as meetings in terms of their craft. And then they began to adopt what is called speculative Freemasonry, which then emphasized moral philosophy, and the tools that one would use, like a compass, a square, a plumb, and things of this nature, took on symbolic spiritual meanings to reflect the teaching of Freemasonry. And then from there it spread to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But it reaches all the way back. The philosophy goes back into antiquity, back to the ancient mystery religions, back to Egypt, Babylonia, and the like.
Now, why the subtitle of your book, A Dangerous Cult, Freemasonry, A Dangerous Cult. Why do you consider it a cult?
Well, it ought to be, how we could define a cult would be any religious group that claims to be have any affinity to the Bible. A cult would include anything that would deny the sufficiency of scriptures, that would have a differing view of God, has a differing view of who Jesus Christ is, the nature of man, and the plan of salvation. In any particular philosophy or theology that denies that which is taught in the Bible would be considered a cult. Mm-hmm. And if you study Freemasonry, there is no question that it is a cult. And every denomination, whether it's Presbyterian or the Lutherans or the Christian Reformed Church or even Roman Catholicism, they have all found it to be incompatible with Christian faith.
Now, don't the Freemasons officially deny that they're a religion at all?
They do. Some of them. In fact, I have a tract. When we gathered information at the PCA study committee, we had people come in. They could talk with us. And I received a lot of information. People would come in from the Grand Lodge of their states and say, well, we're going to set it straight. And so, for example, I'm looking at one right now that says it. The lodge, this is from a tract put out by a Grand Lodge of the state of South Carolina, says it's religious in character, but it's not a religion. However, the two of the most notable authorities in Freemasonry, A.G. Mackey and Albert Pike, whose books are still available, they are considered authorities in that, and they both say, without a doubt, it is a religion. So, if you have prayers, if you worship in temples, and if the head of your lodge is called a worshipful master,
yeah,
it sort of sounds like religion, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's why it's confusing. On what grounds do they deny that it's a religion?
Well, they deny it only in the sense that it is not a particular denomination.
Okay.
Like Presbyterian, Lutheran, Baptist, and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us something about the ghastly oaths required in the lodge.
Well, any time a person enters the lodge, they have to go through some initiations. And in going through the initiations, one of the things that you do, you come to an altar, and you swear on the book that you consider exemplary of the will of God. For most people in America, it's the Bible. But if you were a Jew, you could do it on the Old Testament. If you were a Muslim, you could do it on the Quran. It all depends whatever book that you view as sacred.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when you go through the various degrees, and there are degrees, three fundamental degrees, the first, second, third, in Freemasonry. For example, you will put your hand on a Bible, and this is what you will swear. And it says, all this I most solemnly swear, sincerely promise, and swear with a firm and steadfast resolution, without any mental reservation or secret evasion of mine, binding myself under no less penalty than that of having my throat cut across, my tongue torn out by its roots, and my body buried in the rough sands of the sea at low water mark, where the tide ebbs flow twice in 24 hours, should I ever knowingly violate this, my inner apprentice obligation, so help me God, and keep me steadfast in the due performance of the same. And then in the second degree, you swear the same oath, only this time, you have your breast torn open and all the entrails thrown out for the vultures of the air to eat. And in the third degree, you say that you have your body severed in two, divided into the north and south, your bowels burnt to ashes in the center, scattered before the four winds of heaven. If I ever so vile and perjure a wretch as I should be to prove willfully guilty of violating any part of this oath. So all but this degree that you're going to go through, you make those oaths and you put your hand on the Bible if you're, quote, a Christian, and you swear that.
Wow, sounds like the last job application I filled out. But seriously, I have actually heard, I don't know if you've heard this, Pastor Otis, I saw a documentary on cablevision a couple of years ago where they were tying in the possible connection of the Freemasons to the Jack the Ripper slayings in England in the 19th century because the murders of the prostitutes pictured the very vivid images that you just described in the oaths. I don't know if you've heard that.
Well, I've heard that, but here's the only problem with that view.
Okay.
Is that a woman cannot be a member of a Masonic lodge. She can be a member of the Women's Auxiliary, the Eastern Star, but a woman is not allowed to be a member of the lodge. So, these deaths of Jack the Ripper on some women, if they were truly Masonic slayings, which have been known to have happened, they would be upon men.
I see. In other words, those types of slayings would be specifically for members or former members.
That is correct.
Oh, okay. There was a movie that became fairly popular not so long ago. I believe Nicolas Cage may have starred in it, The National Treasure. Was that with Nicolas Cage?
Yes, I saw that movie. It's a fascinating, wonderful fiction that pictures Freemasonry in a very positive light. It is, the only thing about it is does it go into the religious nature of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if that... that film in any way benefited the cause of Freemasonry? Or?
I heard that it did.
Wow.
Now, as to what extent, I'm not sure, but I did hear some reports that there was a growing interest in the lodge after that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's going to be a remake coming out this Christmas. sequel to that movie, believe it or not.
Okay. Well, what are the meanings of some of the most well-known symbols, such as the compass and square, that you see on bumper stickers? You see them on rings. I've seen Masons wearing the ring with the symbol. I've seen it on tombstones. In fact, I can remember seeing it on quite a number of tombstones when I visited some historic Civil War cemeteries in Virginia years ago. I saw quite a number of tombstones with the Masonic
symbol. Yes, you see it on tombstones, and you've probably driven down the road and see, well, if you live in the South, it's more predominant in the South, but you see some bumper stickers that have a big G, and then you have a mm-hmm. compass and a square superimposed on it.
Yes.
These are fundamental symbols of Freemasonry. The G represents the Masonic deity who's called the Great Architect of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
The compass and the square, and I'm going to quote to you one of the renowned authorities in Freemasonry by the name of Albert Pike. He said that the compass is the symbol of the heavens, represents the spiritual, intellectual, and moral portion of this double nature of humanity. And the square as the symbol of the earth, its material, sensual, and baser portion. And as you go through the Masonic ritual, what happens is it basically teaches a work salvation, the subjugation of the earthly nature, setting free the divine nature in man. And all of this is depicted throughout the three degrees. In the first degree, you have the square on top of the compass. And remember, the square represents man's earthly, material, sensual desires. And it's over the compass, meaning that in the first degree, you're starting out. And the fleshly desires have ascendancy over the spiritual desires. In the second degree, one corner of the compass is over the square, meaning that you're making progress. And then finally, in the third degree, Master Mason, the compass is over the square, meaning that man's divinization is complete. And when you're a Master Mason, you can qualify to receive a Masonic burial.
Hmm. Well, if you have a question about this fascinating subject for our guest, John Otis, our number is 631-321-WNYG. We're going to be going to a break right now. 631-321-WNYG. And if you feel more comfortable remaining anonymous when you call in with a question, you may do so. If you're speaking about the subject and you have family or friends in the lodge and you do not feel comfortable identifying your name or where you're from, that's completely fine. 631-321-WNYG. Perhaps you yourself are a member and you're starting to question its purpose and its practices. You can also remain anonymous if you'd like to call in. 631-321-WNYG. We'll be right back with Pastor John Otis and his book, Freemasonry, A Dangerous Cult. Don't go away. I'm Chris Sarnes, and host of Iron Sharpens Iron on WNYG. I'm thrilled to introduce Lord's Diamonds, a new member of our advertising family. I've worked with the owner, Anew, personally for many years. Lord's Diamonds is a Christian-owned wholesaler of the highest quality diamonds to fine jewelry stores all over the country. Now you, as a Christian radio listener, can purchase the diamond you thought you could never afford for nearly the same wholesale price jewelry stores pay for it. This offer is only for Christian radio audiences. Finally found the one you want to spend the rest of your life with? Lord's Diamonds are your engagement ring and wedding band specialists who help you start off your engagement with a stunning quality diamond at a price within your budget. Christmas is coming and Lord's Diamonds will help you select a precious gift for that precious person in your life from among their vast assortment of GIA certified diamonds, diamond pendants, diamond earrings, and more, all nearly at wholesale prices. Lord's Diamonds is a by appointment only business for personal one-on-one attention. So make your appointment with Anew in Manhattan today, who take advantage of their close to wholesale prices for Christian radio listeners. Call Anew at 888-868-1681. 888-868-1681.
Being kidnapped, tortured, and killed can all be aspects of being Christian in Iraq. But believers boldly continue to stand for Christ. According to CBN News, Reverend Canon Andrew White, an Anglican minister, reported that persecution of Christians by Islamic extremists had increased in the past few months.
Things are bad for everyone in Iraq. Recently, I asked my church members to tell me what they experienced during the week. They told me numerous stories of kidnappings, torture, and death. Later, I realized that as a result of the out-of-control situation in Baghdad, 36 members of my congregation had been kidnapped that week. None of them have been returned.
To know how you can pray for the suffering body of Christ in Iraq and more than 40 other nations, subscribe to the Voice of the Martyrs free monthly newsletter at 875-VOICE. That's 875-VOICE. Call 875-VOICE today. The Voice of the Martyrs is a Christian nonprofit organization.
You're listening to the Spirit of New York, WNYG.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron. If you've just tuned us in, our guest today is Pastor John Otis, the author of Freemasonry, A Dangerous Cult, which is a 350-page book considered to be the most extensive study on Freemasonry in existence, and it is scheduled to be published in 2008. We look forward to seeing that book in print. And one of the things that we were just discussing, Pastor John, before the break, are the symbols of Freemasonry. Does this organization exist apart from symbols?
No, symbols is the basic way by which it conveys its truth through ritual, the use of the ritual along with the symbols. Chris, before we move on to some other aspect, let me mention this as to the nature of religion, because you asked earlier.
Yeah.
They deny it's a religion, although the renowned authorities do indicate that it is a religion. For example, Albert Pike has made this comment, and you'll find this in some of these little pamphlets that various grand lodges produce. Here's what he says: to respect all forms of worship, to tolerate all political and religious opinions, not to blame and still less to condemn the religion of others, not to seek to make converts, but to be content if they have the religion of Socrates, a veneration for the Creator, the religion of good works, a grateful acknowledgement of God's blessings. Then he says, Masonry, around whose altars the Christian, the Hebrew, the Muslim, the Brahmin, the followers of Confucius and Zoroaster can assemble as brethren and unite in prayer to the one God who is above all the Balaam, must needs leave it to each other of its initiates to look for the foundation of his faith and hope to the written scriptures of his own religion. Now, one time when I was on that committee, we had a former worshipful master of the Grand Lodge of Georgia come in and said, I want to set you all straight. She said, go ahead. And he gave us a little pamphlet. And in this pamphlet, which was only one page, okay, front and back, he had that quote that I just mentioned. And he was an elder in a Presbyterian church. Now, we'd already done some research, and we looked at him, and as I looked to the other members after he left, he said, he just shot himself in the foot if he wanted to set us straight by bringing us this pamphlet. Mm-hmm. Where the Muslim, the Christian, the Confucian worshiper can all gather around the same altar and worship the same God. Mm. See, Freemasonry is a syncretistic religion that espouses what is called the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. That all the religions are essentially the same, and we're all brothers.
Mm. Well, it's amazing that any Christian in history, especially one who was truly regenerate, who was biblically literate, I understand that there were a lot of Presbyterians in the 18th and 19th century who were members of the Freemasons, who some of them were noted for being genuine heroes of the faith in some ways, you know, some of them involved in the founding of our nation and so forth. How on earth could they have not seen the inconsistency of these?
Well, that's an amazing thing, Chris. we have been surprised that men would come and defend the lodge of that magnitude. I think what that shows is that they don't understand their Bible as well as they think they do.
Mm-hmm. We do have a caller on the line. We have Don in Lindenhurst, Long Island. Welcome to Iron Sharpens Iron, Don. Are you there, Don?
George Washington was a Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And I had thought that the obelisk or the Washington Monument was a symbolism that was taken up by the Masons. Is this true or false?
There's a lot of truth to that, yes. George Washington, the records do indicate, historical records, that he was a member of a lodge in Virginia. To the amount, extent, we're not sure, but yes, he was. The obelisk is a Masonic symbol, and since this is a family hour, I cannot tell you what that represented.
Now, sir, that's
and
exactly
also,
what I believe there was, and I've told people, and I think you're absolutely right.
And also, on the back of our dollar bill, the pyramid with the all-seeing eye, that's a Masonic symbol.
Right, with the eye, right. Well, you've cleared up something for me, because I've tried to look around. I know my father was a Mason. My mother belonged to the Eastern Stars. Now, that's a long time ago. And I still have my grandfather's Masonic Bible home here. But thank you very much. I appreciate that about the Washington's monument and its symbolic meaning of what it is on a mail. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling in, Don. Just out of curiosity, is there any connection with the Freemasons and the Shriners? Are they two completely different organizations? Or
they are two different organizations, however, you have to be a 32nd degree Mason in order to qualify to be a Shriner.
Oh, okay.
Now, let me say this. You've heard people say, well, he's a 32nd degree. He's really far above the third degree. Actually, you're no more a Mason at a 32nd degree than you are a third degree.
Mm-hmm.
After the third degree, all these other degrees are simply appendixes for further study. When you go through the Blue Lodge, which is the first three degrees, culminating in the Master Mason degree, you're as much a Mason as you'll ever be. But to join the Shriners, you do have to be a Mason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is this an international organization? I understand that there are many Freemasons in Scotland, that there is some kind of rich connection there between the Freemasons in Scotland. But how diverse is this as far as an international scope?
Well, it is international. Now, I don't know how prominent it is over in England or the Asia, but it fundamentally arose in England, as I said, and spread to America. So the predomination of the lodges would be in America and England and elsewhere, but primarily those areas.
Mm-hmm. And what is the Scottish Rite? What's that about?
Scottish Rite Masonry is just one form. You have Scottish Rite Masonry and then York Rite Masonry.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Pike, who I quoted to you earlier, wrote a book, who happened to be a Civil War general, but he wrote a definitive work called Morals and Dogma, which is a major basis of a Scottish Rite Freemasonry in the United States. So it's just the philosophy is the same. Some of the rituals differ in Scottish Rite Masonry and York Rite Masonry.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true that if you become a Mason, you really learn about what it teaches and believes piecemeal over long periods of time, and that it's those in the higher levels of Masonry that really know some of the more demonic imagery or what have you?
So as I said earlier, when you go through the third degree, which is called the Master Mason,
mm-hmm.
you're as much a Mason as you will ever be. So a 32nd degree Mason or a 33 degree is no more a Mason than the third degree.
Okay.
It's just further philosophical training, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Why the even the name? Obviously the name is taken from those who are actually worked with stone and so forth, the term Masons. Why did they adopt that term?
As I said earlier, Freemasonry, it began in England as a craft guild of Masons,
mm-hmm.
those who actually work in the field of Masonry,
mm-hmm.
building buildings. Freemasonry in their ritual say, well, it goes all the way back to the building of Solomon's Temple. And so the Masonic tools that were used in building there, they say, represent some theological teaching. So what you saw was an evolution from the craft guild itself
mm-hmm.
to the philosophy, which is what the lodge is today.
Mm-hmm. And why is there such an attraction for men to join the lodge?
The attraction, probably, I don't know what the rate of people coming into the lodge today is compared to what it was years ago. I think it was more popular years ago. And it's hard to say. You'd have to talk to some men to why they did so. I will tell you this. Being a part of a Masonic lodge has its economic benefits. And therefore, you do business with other Masons, and they may not kill you today like they did of old, but I knew a man in Virginia, the first man I ever interviewed, who came out of Freemasonry. He was a Christian, and after he joined the lodge, within a year, he demitted, meaning he quit the lodge, because his conscience bothered him so bad.
Hmm.
I interviewed him. And he said when he demitted the lodge, I was living in a town of about 2,000 people. And it's like the old Andy Griffith show where they met at the barbershop. Well, here in this town, they met at the gas station. And he said one day he went up to the gas station, and there was all his buddies who were in the lodge with him. They learned that he had demitted the lodge. They all stood up and simultaneously turned their back on him, meaning you're through with us in every regard. And being a Mason has its economic benefits, and it's just part of being a part of a club and then being something, quote, secret, though it's not really secret.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be right back after these messages. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question for Pastor Otis on the Freemasons, our number is 631-321-WNYG, 631-321-WNYG. WNYG. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Construction sites are dangerous places. Construction is going on everywhere in New York. Many construction workers, electricians, and other trades are seriously injured from falls at construction sites. This is Dan Buttafuoco, your personal injury lawyer. What happens when a construction worker falls off a ladder or a scaffold and is seriously hurt or even killed? How does the family pay bills? This is serious. Fortunately, there are laws designed to protect all the trades from accidents at construction sites. These safety laws are known as the labor law, and they provide full compensation for injured workers. If you or someone you know has been injured during any type of construction, please call Buttafuoco & Associates at 1-800-669-HURT. At Buttafuoco & Associates, our labor law cases are cited in court and printed in legal publications. Buttafuoco & Associates, 1-800-669-HURT. We'll come to you anywhere in New York State. Wherever there's construction, there are serious injuries. Serious injuries require serious representation. Call Buttafuoco & Associates, 1-800-669-HURT, for free advice. We help construction workers rebuild their lives.
You know that the ice cream scoop has the power to make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the golf tee brings friends together, that the mailbox keeps them connected. You know that the cataract laser helps you look to the future, while the pacemaker ensures that there's a future to be seen. You know that the lawnmower, the clothes dryer, and the elevator make life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. You know that these things we count on every day started as ideas. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support minority education today so we don't miss out on the next big idea tomorrow. The United Negro College Fund. The mind is a terrible thing to waste. Please visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnes and your host of Iron Sharpens Iron. You've just tuned us in. We are interviewing Pastor John Otis. He is the pastor of Westminster Presbyterian Church, which is a member of the Reformed Presbyterian Church in the United States. And his congregation is located in Corpus Christi, Texas, and we're discussing his book, his soon-to-be-in-print book, Freemasonry, A Dangerous Cult, scheduled to be published in 2008. It's a 350-page work that is considered to be the most extensive study of the Freemasons, at least coming from an opposition point of view. And before the break, Pastor Otis, you were talking about how today you don't know if they would actually literally kill people, as their oaths state. But I can recall back, I believe it was the early 90s, perhaps the late 80s, when John Ankerberg aired a long series of programs exposing the Masonic Lodge. And in particular, I think what angered them is when he revealed, through a former Mason, revealed some of the secret handshakes and oaths and things that were not supposed to be known to the general public. And he received, from what I understand, many death threats.
Well, it's interesting. I was doing this, working on my manuscript at the time that John Ankerberg came out with that series. First, he had Walter Martin, who had written a fine book called The Kingdom of the Cults. Mm-hmm. And he featured a debate between Walter Martin and a 32nd degree Mason. And that was an interesting debate. And then a year later, he brought in the head of a former head of the lodge, which is called a worshipful master. That's the head of the lodge. And on the air, this former worshipful master went through, he didn't just go to the handshakes, Chris. He went through the entire ritual on TV of the Master Mason degree, the culmination of Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
When he did that, that is when the fireworks began. What happened was, there were so many people that called into the TV station. Now, this is the TV station that simply airs his broadcast. He buys time on a certain TV station,
mm-hmm,
cable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the TV station had so many calls, and there were had death threats, that the TV station in the Chattanooga, Tennessee area refused to air it in the Chattanooga area. Now, I did air outside. That goes to show you it is still, it was in 1986, and it would still be a very sensitive issue.
Yeah, and one could only speculate whether they would have actually have carried out any of those threats, but I guess you don't know of any contemporary incidents where Masons have actually murdered anyone through their rituals and so forth.
No, well, they're not going to murder anybody in a ritual. The only person who dies is the person who reveals the secrets, like what happened. This grand former worshipful master, when he revealed the third degree ritual, at that point, most Masons would be obligated to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do now is they don't murder people physically; they will ostracize them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it is a wide complex. And it has its economic ties in cities more than what you might think.
Mm.
And therefore, the guy who does that commits economic suicide in a small community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't mean to indicate that they were murdering people in their rituals, but according to the oaths in their rituals is what I meant.
Yes.
But you're unaware of that actually taking place today.
Well, today, I mentioned to you before the broadcast that the first person to reveal the rituals was a gentleman by the name of Captain William Morgan
mm-hmm.
in 1828. I have his book in my library, and he goes through all the rituals. He shows the handshakes. He shows everything in pictures. Well, he was killed up in your neck of the woods. Two Masons on their deathbed confessed to having kidnapped him, tied him in chains, and threw him overboard in the Niagara River. And they wanted to confess this on their deathbed so they wouldn't die with this on their conscience.
Mm.
So he did disappear. There was, believe it or not, an anti-Mason party, political party, at one point. And believe it or not, the Congress of the United States seriously considered outlawing Masonic oaths.
What? Well, what I do understand, though, things that happen in our contemporary age with the Masons is that they have committed perjury in court to aid other Masons and so forth. Is that correct?
Well, let me tell you what happened in my church in Virginia. After I gave my my study on Freemasonry, one of the ladies in my church said, "Can I come by and see you?" So she did, and she said, "Well, let me tell you what happened. My brother," she said, "came to me, because she had told him about Freemasonry, and he confessed to her that he was on a jury, and a local medical doctor was on trial for selling illegal drugs in his practice. And this doctor had a Masonic ring on. And this juror, her brother, was a Mason, and he saw the Masonic ring. Now, one of the things that you have to do as a Mason is that you're obligated to help your brother under any circumstance. When this man, the juror, saw that Masonic ring, he hung the jury deliberately and then felt bad about it and then later confesses to his sister-in-law what he had done. And then she comes and tells me, you know, John, this is, in light of what you told me about those oaths, let me tell you what this is. So, yes, this man perjured himself.
Hmm. Now, why do so many people have such a high regard for the Lodge, and don't the Freemasons practice many benevolent endeavors, participate in many benevolent endeavors? And I can recall even years ago, perhaps a little over 20 years ago, I worked for a professional fundraising firm that raised a lot of money for the Shriners Hospital for burned and crippled children.
Yeah.
That was before I knew anything about Freemasonry or the Shriners. In fact, I think that was the first time I'd ever heard of the term the Shriners. But what about these wonderful things they seem to be doing in the community?
Well, that's what the Masons and the Shriners are known for. They're known for their benevolent activities in the community, particularly in the area of hospitals and children's hospitals. But it fits in if you understand the theological focus of Freemasonry. It's a works-oriented religion. So there's a reason why they emphasize this, because it is part of their perfection. And so this is all that people know about the Lodge. They know that men have want to be better morally because of it. So they think, well, they do all these good things in the community. Why pick on them? In fact, when I was on that study committee, we had people that were in a very unfriendly tone come up to us and say, I cannot believe that you are picking on a upstanding, moral, godly organization like the Masonic Lodge. Why don't you go pick on somebody else? I mean, there are a lot of adamant people.
Mm-hmm. And what is the secrecy all about? Why is this a secret society?
The secrecy is really not all that secret, because you know how I got all the knowledge that I have about it? I wrote off to the Masonic publishing houses that published books on the ritual. And I thought that was kind of ironic that I could purchase everything that I needed to know about the Masonic Lodge from a Masonic publishing house. And they didn't ask any questions when I wrote, and they sold their books to me. So in that regard, it's not a secret. However, the secrecy, I think it's fashionable. And it goes back to the ancient mystery religions. These pagan mystery religions, the Masonic authorities, Albert Mackey and Albert Pike, say that the philosophy, the spiritual teaching, goes back to these ancient mystery religions, and they practice secrecy. And if you look at some of the Greek and Persian mystery religions, you're going to see a very common ritual that was carried out thousands of years ago.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, the denomination that your congregation is a part of, Westminster Presbyterian Church, is in the Reformed Presbyterian Church in the United States, RPCUS. What would happen if a congregant within that denomination, it became known that congregant was a member of the Masonic Lodge? Would he be disciplined?
Yes, he would be subject to discipline unless he demitted. Now, what the PCA did, along with my denomination later, did this. Well, they set up a means of instruction whereby if the elders of the church found out that a man was a member of the Lodge, they would approach him and say, we have some serious problems with this, and we're going to ask you to study various issues with us. And after that period of study, depending on however long the church wants, the elders want, after that period of time where they share information about this, then if you do not demit from the Lodge, you would be subject to church discipline, for the very reason is that you cannot hold a vow in a church, a Christian church, simultaneously with the vow of the Masonic Lodge. Because to carry out your vow in the Masonic Lodge, you have to deny Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why is Jesus Christ forbidden to be mentioned in the Lodge?
Because Freemasonry exemplifies a syncretistic religion, meaning, as that quote I mentioned to you earlier,
yes.
That according to Freemasonry, the great architect of the universe is a one God, the all-seeing eye God, the great architect, and therefore truth is not deposited in just one sect or creed, which they call Christianity, but it's diversified among many religions. Therefore, to mention Jesus Christ in the Lodge is to be sectarian and to violate the very principle of toleration. And therefore, when you have the Bible quoted in the Lodge and they're dealing with passages that mention Jesus Christ, they are deliberately omitted so as not to offend someone who may not be a Christian.
And that's interesting. Because that kind of thinking is something that is obviously very prevalent in liberal, mainline, apostate denominations and churches, but is that the makeup of the bulk of the Masonic Lodge membership? Would there be a tendency towards liberalism or the other direction or in either direction?
Ironically, it would be in the other direction. The denominations that would probably have the greatest number of affiliates with the Masonic Lodge would be Baptist groups.
Wow.
I'm not trying to pick on Baptists today. I'm just giving a reality here.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. There was when I was in Virginia, one of my good friends was a pastor of First Baptist Church in a nearby town, and he was all aware of my thing on Freemasonry. And he agreed with me, but he came up to me one day and he said, "John," he said, "let me tell you what happened." He says, 2 years ago, this is back in the early 80s now, he said, at the Southern Baptist Convention, some guy tried to pass out tracts condemning Freemasonry. And John, I had to help rescue this man from being physically beat up.
Wow.
Because they were so upset with this man. Now, interestingly, post-2000, I think the Southern Baptist Convention has been open to see a problem with it. But you're going to find a lot of men in the South, members of various Baptist churches, and that's just where it just happened to manifest itself. And somehow, well, like I said, they've been in Presbyterian churches too, so I'm not just going to say Baptist.
Right.
So it's people who really do not know the Bible well. For example, the man that relented that I mentioned to you earlier, he said, as I grew in my studying the Bible, that's when God began to convict me that I had sinned by joining the Lodge.
And this will be your final opportunity to call Pastor Otis with a question on the Freemasons. This is our final segment. Our number is 631-321-WNYG, 631-321-WNYG. Don't go away.
I take my spiritual responsibilities very seriously, and we're willing to serve the Lord in whatever way we have to.
Dan Bonifugo is a different kind of personal injury attorney.
Psalm 1:1 says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly." You will see that prominently displayed in our waiting room. We consider that an admonition from God that you should choose your lawyer very carefully. Somebody you know, trust, someone that's recommended to you by a pastor or a leader. If you do that, your chances of a satisfying and rewarding outcome are that much greater, and we'll be blessed.
At Dan Bonifugo & Associates, Dan Bonifugo heads a legal team that cares.
We help accident victims rebuild their lives, counsel them, minister to them spiritually, do everything we can to have a positive outcome. That's what our firm is all about.
When you have an injury resulting from somebody else's negligence, call Dan Bonifugo. There are no upfront fees. The only fee is after you win your case. For a free consultation, call the law offices of Dan Bonifugo at 1-800-NOW-HURT. 1-800-NOW-HURT. Hurt.
We are honored to welcome Bishop Anthony D'Onofrio of the Upper Room Christian World Center to WNYG with his new broadcast, Dare to Believe, Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. for nourishing words of faith and sound doctrine. Listen to Bishop D'Onofrio as he dares you to believe this Sunday, 8:30 a.m. on the Spirit of New York, WNYG.
Welcome back. We have another caller on the line, Bruce, in Center Reach, Long Island. Welcome to Iron Sharpens Iron, Bruce.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Chris. I was just wondering if your guest was familiar with the incident that took place here on Long Island back in 2004 in Patchogue, New York.
Yeah, I remember that.
Where a man was killed during a messianic initiation ceremony. They were supposed to be firing blank bullets, but instead had real bullets in the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And a 76-year-old Mason was charged with manslaughter. Is he familiar with that?
Yeah, I remember.
I am not familiar with that, no. But I've never known guns to be used in Masonic rituals, though.
Yeah, I think that was a part, that was an odd part of that story back then. One of the reasons I didn't even bring it up, because I did remember it, but I don't think that it is an official part of the ceremony. I'm not sure how that wound up in there, the gun that was supposed to be filled with blanks, but I do remember the story.
Now, if he had been run through by a compass to his breast, I could understand that. I'm serious, because that is part of the ritual. But guns, no, they've never been part of the Masonic ritual.
Well, okay. This was probably just a radical little lodge then. But thanks for calling, Bruce.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
You've mentioned the unfortunate Baptist sympathies towards the Masons and some Presbyterians and so forth. What findings have other denominations made about the lodge?
Well, it goes on. The Christian Reformed Church years ago, I think in the late 40s or the 70s, condemned Freemasonry. The Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, the OPC, they preceded the work before the PCA.
Mm-hmm.
And they all condemned it as being incompatible with the faith. But let me mention this. You'll find this humorous, Chris. After we had done our committee report, the PCA, we met up in Grand Rapids, Michigan to present the report. And I remember before the report was given, I introduced myself to a man. And he says, "Oh, you're John Otis. You're on that Freemasonry committee, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, yes." He says, "Well, you know what? 2 years ago when the PCA decided to do that, I was a Mason." He was a radiologist from Kansas City. And he said, "I didn't understand why the denomination would want to pick on us Masons." He says, "But the fact that they did that, it caused me to study." And he says, "I want you to know, John, that I saw how idolatrous it was, and I got out." Well, what was interesting, during the debate on the floor of the assembly, there were some people that wanted to kill the committee because they thought it was just too radical for us to make that kind of decision. And it looked like they were going to sway the day until I saw this man that talked to me, the radiologist, come to the microphone, and he said, and I'll never forget what he said, in this deep voice, he says, "I once bowed my knee to Baal, but never again. And if I were to reveal the sacred Masonic word right here, if there were any Masonic brothers in this room, they would be obligated to split my guts right here."
Wow.
And you could hear a pin drop. And when I got back to my seat with my buddies, they said, John, tell us the sacred Masonic word, because we never seen anybody's guts spilled out on the floor of the assembly before. And,
yeah, that's pretty frightening.
Sure is.
But what would you suggest the elder board of a church do if they discovered that a member of the congregation was a Mason?
What should they do?
Yes.
They should do what I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. They should approach the individual and tell them of their concerns and say, you're going to be studying with us, about the Masonic Lodge, and after a period of time, we trust that you will come to see the errors. And after that study, if they don't, then they would be subject to church discipline. And they could be excommunicated from the church by virtue of the fact that they have abandoned the faith. Because I said, you cannot maintain the principles of the lodge with those of the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
Once you go understand the Masonic rituals, and my book goes into great detail about that, you'll see at every place you have to deny the Christian faith. The first thing you do, they tie a blindfold around you, and then they have you say, Brother Otis, for example, if I were joining the lodge, Brother Otis, who has long been in the darkness, is seeking the light. Now, there's no Christian who loves the Lord Jesus who would say, "I am still the light of something else besides the light of Jesus."
Wow. Well, I definitely have my appetite whetted to read this book, and I look forward to it being printed, Pastor Otis. How can we get in contact with you to order this book?
I have a website that is in the process of being formed called Triumphant Publications. I've started a printing ministry years ago, and I do my own printing of books now, and this is about the fourth book that I have in print. And so when it comes out, I don't know when in 2008, probably in the summer or thereabouts, people can get it through the website called triumphantpublications.org, but it's not available yet.
Right, and we'll at least give the Westminster Presbyterian Church website if you could.
It is westminsterrpcus.org.
That's www.westminsterrpcus.org. Pastor John Otis, it's a great, it was a great honor to have you back on the program. This is truly a fascinating subject. I look forward to having you back on the program very soon, and especially when the book is in print, we'll interview you again on this fascinating subject.
Well, Chris, in about a couple of days, I'm going to call you to be sure you're still around. All right?
Thanks, brother. And I want to thank our callers who called in, and I want to thank all of you for listening, and I want you to always remember that Jesus Christ is a far, far greater Savior than you are a sinner. God bless.
Iron Sharpens Iron, sponsored in part by Botafuco and Associates.